Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Here's a friendly suggestion. Those beautiful views deserve some new frames. Custom designs and superior service make getting new windows a work of art. A free, no-pressure renewal by Andersen consultation is just a call or click away. When it's time to talk windows, we'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Kick, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm still looking for a job, everybody. Pete was actually, not to call you out, it was actually very nice. He was very worried about me and worried that I was calling out LinkedIn for a job. And he should be. It's really like...
It's dead, definitely.
It's very dire with my family. One of my kids is probably not going to make it.
But oh, like, man. Well, I guess that's why you have
LinkedIn
more than one.
You want to give me a job. Yeah, exactly. A backup.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is that part of LinkedIn where you say which of your kids are like really up against it?
Hey guys,
sorry, I don't use the site.
Looking for my next role. One of my kids is not going to make it otherwise. Is that what?
Great tactic. That's what the person said to you when they came to our show to try to get a job from you, right?
Yes. This is, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, true story. There was a woman years ago who tried to get a job from me. And on stage, her audience question is, why haven't you responded to me on LinkedIn?
I mean, that's bad. That's awesome. That's
karma. Call stick that's to why it you don't have a job. Yeah.
And here's the thing. We've been married for 20 years.
It's a beautiful meet cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, we reenacted it at the wedding. It was beautiful.
And here we have meet cutes. We should get to our
Pete
amazing
working,
guests.
Obviously, and flexing on us with these blinds that he's just beautifully, like, that's rich.
Yeah,
that's
he's got belly. Blinds, buddy.
Yeah, he's got that blinds money.
We're going to keep talking about blinds money for a while and not welcome our guests. And I'm just kidding. We have two great guests for you this evening. So why don't we kick it off? Our first guest this evening is the creator behind Huxley, which is out now. And there's a prequel book coming soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Morrow. Ben, welcome. Hey, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Very excited to have you here. Very excited to talk. So you have worked... as a, let me get it right, but like art director and, oh my God, I'm blanking on the other term.
Concept designer.
Thank you. There you go. See, you imagined a whole world for me in terms of what your job is. And you've done that for years on various movies and have since created your own original IP, which Huxley is part of. It's expansive, I gotta say, and positively say. You've got the graphic novel, you've got the prequel book we've talked about, you've got a bunch of short films that are online as well. I mean, just to start off, like, going from that transition to where you were working on films to graphic novels, what was the transition like? I mean, it's not, we talk about this a lot on the show, but it seems like, oh, it could be a one-to-one going from storyboards to comics, but it's not exactly.
I think, I mean, I'd never done it before, so I'd always admired, like, Akira and all these like amazing graphic novels and manga that I grew up with. I think it wasn't until maybe after Elysium where we basically took a movie from like start to finish. Like it was a couple words on a page. We worked with Neil to like, while he was finishing the script and developing the world.
And this is Neil Blomkamp.
Neil Blomkamp.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for anybody listening.
I was thinking Neil.
Yeah. I was a huge fan of District 9 and was floored to be able to work on his second movie. And, but then we had to illustrate every scene from the movie, like what's the exact story moment. So you have to get good at like capturing a moment of a story in time, and a graphic novel is kind of doing this, but the whole movie instead of just like a key scene. So I kind of was doing this for my job a lot, telling other people's stories and capturing these moments. And whether naively or foolishly, I was like, I should make a graphic novel. Or like from the outside, it looks so easy. And then you start and you're like, oh my God, this is so hard. And then you look at all your heroes' graphic novels and you're just like, this is like 5 years of someone's life, just one of these Akira volumes. And you either accept it or just either you run from it or accept it and just say, okay, I can do this too, or I want to go through that too. And so some of it transferred over specifically because we had to like design worlds for new IP. Sometimes we had to adapt other people's work, like on Spider-Man and stuff like that, where you have like, here's the war from the first movie. I want it to look different in this movie. Show me some ideas for this.
And sorry, not to keep clarifying for you, but you worked on Amazing Spider-Man 2, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And then like the Hobbit movies, working for Peter on like mostly a few things here and there that John Howe and Alan Lee did.
And sorry to interrupt, that's Shields. Peter, would you say Peter? It's
Peter Jackson, yes.
Pete LePage.
Pete LePage, that's right.
Yeah.
No. Sorry,
can you stop like that. For real now.
Really helpful. Can you talk about the challenges of making a graphic novel? And like, I feel like that's something that we hear about the, like, I have it, I want you to read this, but talk about like the actual harder parts in the middle that you were just saying.
Well, a lot of it is like on a movie, there's hundreds or sometimes thousands of people working on something, right? So like on a creature movie, maybe one person's doing the eyeball, one person's doing the hair, one person's doing, someone else is doing storyboard, someone else is doing the script, and you have director doing the directing. But on graphic novel, it's one of the few mediums that one person can still do everything. I mean, there's still usually like a lot of people that work on graphic novels as well, but it is one of the few mediums where one person can kind of do it all. It just takes a long time. And so for me, it was like, starting that, it's like, I have to be the production designer. I have to be the writer. I have to be the director. I have to be the concept artist. I have to do everything. So every page is almost like the hardest day of my life. Because it's like, well, next page, I have to design a whole city. I have to design a vehicle that I haven't thought about yet. I have to design a crowd that all needs custom costumes that don't exist yet. All from angles. I've never drawn a human being from in my entire life. And you're like, okay, how am I gonna solve this? And every day is just like kind of like this. So it's like the ultimate training ground as an artist. Like, again, you can either run from it or accept it and just like, I'm going to grow from this and figure it out.
Well, I would... what a perfect pull quote. Every page is the hardest day of my life. That is like working in
comics. For years.
Well, just, I mean, you killed it. It looks unbelievable. Yes. It's such an amazing world you created. I mean, is it like taking something that's in your head and trying to get it on the page, or how do you artistically kind of come up with these characters? Because it sucks you in, and it's amazing.
And sorry, just to give some context here for real this time. So the book, at least Huxley, it takes place in a far future world that's been partially destroyed. At least in this book, we're following to sort of regular Joes who discover a robot, and that thrusts them, and very specifically the robot, on a much bigger adventure as things go, to uncover secrets about the past and the future, etc. So that's kind of just to give a basis of what we're talking about here. But now back to Pete's question.
Well, which is a great job. And please tell us more about how you take something from inside your head and bring it to a page.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, Well, it started around 11 years ago when I drew that original like drawing of the orange robot Huxley.
So when you hold that up, that's 11 years of your life is what you're saying.
More or less. I mean, one of the designs, because the style was there when I was in college. So actually one of the little robot designs walking around in the market was maybe like 17 years. So like a long time ago. It's like a little like, oh, it's kind of existed a while ago, but it didn't really start until I drew Huxley. And, but then it took a while for me to figure out like, who's this character? What's this world going to be? What's the story around this character? And it just took a while to develop that more. And I did kind of view it initially almost like a color script. So in my head, I saw a desert. I saw this orange character. I wanted two red characters and an orange character going through the desert. So it started pretty simply like this. I kind of had all the bigger plot points and story beats mapped out, but I didn't know exactly how I wanted it to happen. So I would leave that up to once I got there. I didn't want to plan everything out and spend like 2 or 3 years without starting a page. So I really wanted to just start kind of chronologically, because I was doing this while I was working on like Valerian and all these movies and Halo and stuff. So I want to make sure every hour or day I spent into it was going towards slowly finishing pages fairly chronologically. A lot of it was like, I had the plot beats down, and then once it was like, okay, they go to the city and they meet this villain. I don't know what the villain looks like. I don't know what this like gangster bar looks like that they go to, but I know that that moment happens and then they get captured or whatever. And then it would just be figuring out exactly how that happens from like a directing shot design standpoint, and then slowly illustrate it over however many months it takes. Yeah.
What was it like working on so many like sci-fi projects? I'll call it your day job. You're working on all those films, and then you're also working on this, which is in the same genre. How did you sort of protect the space for Huxley?
Well, a lot of it actually started also not necessarily like as a counterpoint to my day job, but like working in a production environment is sort of like an arms race of techniques. So like everything has to be more photoreal. It's got to be more realistic, more whatever the trend or new tool, you need to pick it up to stay competitive as a job. And there's something, it's very useful to learn all that stuff, but something kind of gets lost from like feeling like I'm creating art. Like when I was younger, I'm drawing with a pencil, I'm painting. I feel like, wow, I made art. Everything came out of my head, through my hand, and I feel like I made a piece of art. And so once I started working in film, you get further and further away from that a lot of the time. And so Huxley was almost like the therapy or counterpoint to preserving, I'm still an artist. So no matter what I do during the day, I'm happy to learn any new tool. But when I come home, I can continue adding to this thing that I feel like satisfies me creatively as like, I'm still an artist. Look at this cool painting I did by hand. And kind of created a positive, a good like kind of yin yang of working for them, working for me, working for them, working for me kind of thing. Yeah.
I am curious about this is the wrong word, but multidisciplinary nature of this, where you are doing not just the graphic novel, but multiple books, short movies. I assume there's probably more things bubbling in the background as well. Is part of that just that you were working on it for so long that you're like, I want to hit this hard? Because I feel like we have people, when they talk about this sort of thing, they're like, well, I'll put out a graphic novel, we'll see what happens. And you're hitting the ground running. And I say that complimentarily.
I mean, I think because I went through all this on other people's projects, a lot of that just like, I never do anything just like randomly. I always take a job because I want to learn something. Like when I started, it was kind of like The Hobbit was my first big movie I worked on. And you're obviously like a very small part of a big thing. It's like, can I have a small impact on a big thing? Then slowly working my way up to maybe Elysium was like a medium impact on a slightly bigger project. And eventually trying to have a big impact on a big project. Like, what does that feel like? And what does that look like? But it's obviously always someone else's thing in the end of the day. And you don't really have control. And that's fine. That's part of like the learning experience to me. And getting to see some of the best people in the world, like how they create movies, how they tell stories, just really good, like, kind of education, I feel. But for me, it's always been so I can apply it to my own things eventually. And so while I was doing that, I know even if I made a graphic novel and say I want to go pitch that, I know the kind of like process that would happen. So they would see a cool comic book, be like, this is great art, but what would this look like? And a huge part of the process is like even figuring out what the adaptation would even look like. So making a trailer a year or so before the book was done with a small team to kind of plan ahead, like, to eliminate those maybe doubts or unknowns in the room where, well, oh, well, this is what it would look like. And I was there along the way doing the adaptation work. So it looked as faithful as possible to like my drawings and all this stuff that I just don't have time to do some crazy model of it for every page. So that it really helped a lot just to do that kind of process ahead of time. And then because it takes so long to even, you know, find a great publisher that clicks with you, like the book was done and it even took like a year or two before it's finally in bookstores like it is now. But because of that overlap, I was already working on the next book. So it seems like it's like, oh my God, the books are all coming out so fast. Like, well, it's, I wasn't sitting idly. Like, a lot of work was being done the whole time.
I do want to mention before I forget, every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris, who works at a restaurant called Shift, which is fantastic. If you're ever down in New Orleans, please do go down there. He either creates or curates a cocktail for us. And this week he created a cocktail based on Huxley, which is called the Wasteland Ronin. It's mezcal, rye whiskey, absinthe, lime juice, agave, smoked salt, and lime wedge. That sounds really good.
Very good.
Very good. And so he is bringing the massive world of Huxley to life through this cocktail. So there you go. I do want to ask you before we get back to the book, just apropos of our podcast, you did work on Amazing Spider-Man 2. What was that experience like? Was there any scene in particular that you worked on that really jumped out to you?
I think because I worked on it when I was at Weta, so it was sort of like we were working on a bunch of mostly anything to do with the actor. So like suits for like Green Goblin, any small props that Peter would interact with. I think I worked on some early like web shooter ideas. I think the only thing, one of the main things I did that was in there was like Green Goblin's like grenade, some stuff like that. So long ago, maybe some stuff for Electro, Jamie Foxx's character. I think I did a couple things. Yeah, I'm trying
to
think of
stuff. Did you animate him saying Hickory Dickory Dock?
No, you wrote that line though, right? Yeah. That was your line that you said.
But that was really cool. I think the biggest thing was maybe the Green Goblin suit and seeing them build all that, and like the, I think we also did the, like his hover.
Oh yeah,
the goblin
craft or the goblin, I'm not sure what, the glider, like. It was so complicated and detailed. It was like all real, and it was really cool to see that one get built.
Awesome. Before we wrap up here, Pete has a question, and then
I just wanted three questions.
Before we wrap up here, three questions.
I know what Pete's question is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You have an amazing wall behind you. Is there anything you would want to point out back there? Some really cool-looking stuff.
Original pencil drawings from Huxley. This is from Akira and Akira, and this is Ghost in the Shell.
Oh yeah,
original background paintings. It's from Rico's gallery. If you guys know this, I think they're one of the few. They have the exclusive right to do like from the original background painter. So these are like the most authentic like color reproduction from like Akira. I think they have some Miyazaki movies as well.
Whoa!
But if you're an anime fan, they have some really awesome like prints.
That's awesome.
Check that out. Thank you.
We do have a question here from the comments. Is there any connection between the defunct Huxley MMO from 2010 and this Huxley? If not, are there any plans for a new Huxley game based on this new Huxley?
Nothing related to a game that never came out. This is original graphic novel from my own story. But hopefully, there's a lot of things in development. If something bigger happens, I will definitely let you guys know.
Well, that's awesome. A nice segue to get to the last thing I wanted to ask you, which is what is next for Huxley? Now that the graphic novel is out, you do have the next book is coming out October. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the early hardcovers ship out October. I think the public version in the UK is out in October, and then worldwide the version over here should be around December, so just in time for Christmas and holidays and stuff. Yeah,
cool. And very at this cool. point, are you working on the third Huxley book, or is that?
Yeah. Wow. Right. So the next book, Oracle, is like a really big story, and it will be in two parts. So the next book after that, I'm not sure if I can say the name, but the next book after that will be like both those together is like the full movie size story of that whole narrative. Wow. And then after that is the third book in the trilogy. So it'll be four books for three stories at the moment. Wow. Is the current plan.
Wow.
Ben, that is awesome. The book looks great. It's fantastic. Congratulations on everything. I'm glad you finally got it out there after 10 years. That's very cool.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Stay busy out there.
Thanks, Ben.
Take care.
We'll see you soon.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Huxley. You can get the graphic novel out now. As we mentioned, the next one is
really cool.
Or very soon. So search for it online and check it out.
I want to ask him if he was any relation to Mike Huxley, the kid I went to middle school with.
Oh, yeah. And if not, will he be any relation?
Right, exactly, in the future. Maybe Mike Huxley made the MMO from 2010.
We're going to figure this out by the end of the podcast, I'm sure. In the meantime, we have another guest on this evening. He is the fantastic creator behind the current Kickstarter for carbon-based The Art of Louis LaRosa. Big coincidence. Here's Louis LaRosa.
The guy behind it.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. Very excited to talk about this as well.
Thanks.
So Carbon Beast is a deluxe art book being put out by OD Press. It is available, if anybody's curious, for another 9 days. The Kickstarter is closing up at around midnight Eastern on Thursday, September 4th. Currently, you have, of the $5,000 goal, $58,000, $422.
Okay.
That's not how you say that. But
we don't know money is our thing.
We know comics though, and you draw some awesome comic book art. You worked on everything from Valiant stuff to Marvel stuff and everything in between. This is a very classic question that I ask every time we talk about an art book, but I feel like everybody gives a slightly different answer. When you're approaching something like this, when you're approaching like a 20-year retrospective on your work, where do you start and what story are you trying to tell?
Oh Lord! Well, I don't have too many originals, so I had to look through all my files. You know, it's all JPEGs, and I just went as far back as I could. And my earliest work was this mini series for Marvel called Citizen V.
Oh yeah!
Bolt's spinoff in 2001, and then I think like Punisher was shortly after that, and I jumped around a lot in my early days, and a lot of like projects that would get started and then kind of get canceled, like Firestorm. And anyways, I bounced around a lot in my early days, and I left the industry for 5 or 6 years after that. And I came back in 2010 or 11, was able to like start over again. And this was the time that Valiant was rebooting.
Yeah.
My old Punisher editor had called me up. I was an elementary school teacher at the time. He's like,
"That's awesome.
He's like, hey, I got some work for you, man." I was like, "Well, I've hardly drawn a lick in years. I'm a teacher. Work with the fifth graders." And he's like, "Well, we had a good time. You know, just think about it. If you want back in." And he put a bug in my head. And the first leg of my career, those first 5 years, and I was thinking about this while I was looking back through my work. I just wasn't happy with my work. I wasn't happy with the way it was turning out. I was a penciler, right? And you work with an inker and a colorist, and you know, you're on tight deadlines, and you draw your pages and then you hand it off to two other artists to finish, and it comes out, you know, differently than how you had pictured in your head. And anyways, when I started back at Valiant years later in 2011 or so, I started inking myself, and I just wanted more control. I was like, I don't even know how to ink myself, but if anyone's gonna screw up my work, it might as well be me. And I don't mean that as a, I worked with some great inkers too. I'm only half joking there, because I work with some great inkers, but it's just, you know, like they're not, it's not always a situation where you gel very well, and or they're not mind readers. So it's like, let me see what I could do and see if I could get it closer to what I have in my head, get that on the page. And it made the drawing more enjoyable for me, having that control. It took a lot longer, but it helped me grow a lot. And I feel like, looking back, that's really when my work exploded, creatively speaking. And I just felt like I had fewer constraints, 10, 15. Was working on this, and I, you know what, I'm rambling, and I don't even remember what the question.
No, that's okay. You're definitely great. Hitting it. I am curious, though, just to stay on this point. Once you realized you could do your own inking, how did that, if at all, retroactively approach how you approached penciling?
Oh well, it's funny because now I hardly pencil. It's more like if I jumped to inks pretty early on. Like if I took what I do in pencil on the page now and handed it to someone else, I don't know if they'd know what to do with it. They're just like rough layouts. I'm just kind of breaking things down, and it's just like very bare bones, you know. Like most of my drawing now, I would say, is in ink. So I jumped to that.
So you got rid of penciling completely. You just ditched it.
You know, it's funny though, because these terms like penciling and inking, to me, it's all drawing, and they're like,
yeah,
this, like, there are terms that got started early on in comics, I guess. You know, I don't know when these terms officially were used, 30s, 40s, 50s, but it was like about, you know, breaking down the production line to hand off to several different artists, you know, specializing. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's an artificial way of doing things, you know. I get it though, it's for efficiency, but it doesn't feel natural at all. Like to me, like I'm like, it just feels weird to draw something to a point and stop and hand it off to someone else to finish.
And well, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. How do you feel about coloring then?
Well, I've worked with some of the best colorists in the business, like Laura Martin, Matt Lopez, and Brian Reber, and I'm forgetting too many. Rico Renzi. I'm forgetting half the colorists I've been lucky enough to work with, but I'd like to try my hand at it. I mean, I used to paint, and you know, I feel like I can do it. I feel like that's the next step for me. I like to mix it up every few years to keep from getting bored and just try to grow as an artist, you know, not plateau and not keep repeating myself and get stuck, stagnant. So I'm feeling like that's the next thing I'd like to tackle. I'd probably have to do that digitally, but I don't know how to do any kind of digital art.
Technology is the next frontier. Well, I mean, I got to think doing a book like this really gives you that time to know.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I was going to say doing the Zoom interview here is like at stretching my ability. I get like super stressed out. Like, am I doing this right? Is this on?
It's really good. You're the colors great. Are really great.
Yeah. What were you asking though, Justin?
Oh, I was saying, I got to think like doing an art book like this is a great way to sort of see that next frontier, like you're saying, when you can really look back at everything that's come before.
Yeah, I think so. But even then, like, I think heavily in terms of value, you know, like lights and darks. And one of my favorite artists is Frank Frazetta.
Of course.
And he could be very monochromatic. You know, like he has paintings where it's just like, you know, mostly brown, you know.
Yeah.
They have a splash of red or green or blue here or there, but for the most part, it's like almost like soupy, you know.
Well, I feel like occasionally I'll look at his work and I'll be like, oh, this is like the best cave painting. Yeah. Or like, this is an unbelievable pelt with a drawing on it or something. Uh-huh. You know, it has that nature thing.
Yeah. Well, there's one he famously did over just a, it was like a bare piece of masonite, I think, right?
What? Right.
He said he was like, he procrastinated to the last minute. And then he realized he didn't even have a canvas to paint on. And he ripped a board out of the floor to paint on. And I can't remember the name of the painting. It was like cavemen, like you said. That's what reminded me of it. It was like Neanderthals or something. Mm. So he let the board do half the work there. The texture of the board was like the background of the painting. I don't know. That always stuck with me. I just thought it was so awesome that he could pull off a pool and pull a rabbit out of his hat at the last minute and make it work like that. But yeah, anyway, awesome. I'd probably, if I would color or paint myself, I'd probably start off very monochromatic like he does.
Just because we're looking at this right now, you have I would describe it as a very realistic style. And on this page, at least, for anybody who's listening to the podcast later, you've got a barbarian riding a dinosaur. But on the rest of the pages, there's drawings of the skeleton and anatomy of the dinosaur. Yeah. Is that how you attack that realistic style? Or is this just sort of a isolated page?
No, those were... actually, these are studies of Allosaurus, and I did these for Lee Bermejo. He was doing a vicious circle with Tomlin, and he was like, I've got a scene in here with an Allosaurus. I was like, please let me give you all the info. I was like, this is my thing. I was like, let me help you understand this animal inside and out, and I probably just went absolute ape shit on it and just went nuts and totally nerded out. And like you could see, I was doing skeletal diagrams, how the muscles attach to the bones, you know, here's how the thing moves through space, you know, three-quarter view. He was probably like, God damn, this guy is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining you doing this for everything. Like, this is a Subaru Outback, and here's the wheel.
Well, it was like Leonardo da Vinci, who is like, I can't really understand something. I don't really understand something until I draw it, and I'm kind of the same way. But even when I draw it, I want to understand it. I want to understand what I'm drawing. I want to know how it works, how it's put together, the layers. And I've always loved anatomy since I was a kid. I one of the things I did early on when I was in high school to learn anatomy, I got a full length mirror next to my drawing desk, and I would work. On one side, I had a full length mirror next to my drawing desk. On the other side, I had a set of weights and a bench. And I would like work out and exercise, and then I would sit down and draw and like flex in the mirror and be like, oh, so that's how triceps work. And, you know, that's how, you know, biceps look from this angle and that angle. But I was just always real interested in how living things work and move. And that especially applies to dinosaurs. they're such like a pop culture trope.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like they're done very well very often, and I want to do them. I want to be the dinosaur guy, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so that. Again, just to talk about some pages we're looking at here, like, we've been looking through a lot of Valiant stuff in particular, which, like you said, was one of the things that really brought you back to comics. But you've also got this great Cyclops Wolverine thing here. Are there any, I know this is like a classic question, but are there any characters that you haven't tackled that are sort of your white whale that you would want to take on?
I've always liked like the grittier, intense, darker character. So I'm probably, you know, I'm getting up there in age now, and like the fanboy in me has cooled off a little as far as being like a, you know, total nerd about Spider-Man. It's like I still like them all, but like as a professional, I think like you're like, all right, I can't always control what I get to draw, and you got to find your hook into whatever character you're given to draw. But anyways, going back to what you're saying, if I had a pick, I'm always comfortable drawing Wolverine. I'm always comfortable drawing Hulk. Conan would be cool to tackle. I've gotten to do a few things on my bucket list. Like I was a huge Transformers nerd growing up, and I did a couple of Transformers. Optimus is probably my favorite comic book character. If you put a gun to my head, I would have to say it's Optimus.
Wow,
that's awesome. More than
Superman, you know. I would love to do a Wolverine in the Savage Land
one. Ooh, yeah, that's a fun.
Just any way I could work in a dinosaur or predator in the Savage Land. Ooh, now that he's with Marvel now. Like in the Badlands trailer, they show a Tyrannosaurus Rex skull in the ship. Like that should be a story right there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a character called Ripped Dinosaur that I really want your take on. I feel like the triceps is where you could really pop up.
Well, I'm actually curious about going in the other direction. Clearly, like dinosaurs, jungles, big fights, barbarians, that's very much in your wheelhouse. This is kind of a question for Pete, who is a huge fan of him, but what is your hook into somebody like the Punisher in those situations?
What's my hook into the Punisher?
Yeah.
Like, you mean when I got the assignment years ago? Like,
yeah, like, how did you, given that he's just a guy with guns, usually not riding a dinosaur, what is the moment where you're like, okay, I get him. I get
that's
what he's
good,
about.
That's actually a good question, because when the chance of the assignment was brought up to me, I wasn't super excited at first. I was like, oh, just a fucking guy with guns and a trench coat. It wasn't why I wanted to draw comics, right? But if I thought of a monster, then it worked for me. So I just, like, this guy, and this is, a lot of it was taken from Garth Ennis's script and his proposal. But, like, just a guy who's dead inside, a serial killer who, you know, just kills other criminals or killers. And so I was like, okay, so I'm going to... age him. Actually, that wasn't my idea either. You know, they're like, all right, Frank's going to be a guy in his 60s, an actual Vietnam War vet. But one thing I wanted to do was not show his eyes or show him as little as possible, have him in shadow, you know, just make him like a living embodiment of death. So I was like, play with shadow as much as I can, play with texture, you know, a lot of scarring, a lot of wrinkles, double. Things like that kind of made him more of a monster-y comic book character to me than just a guy, like you said.
Yeah.
Founder me, there's Warzone from the 90s. You ever?
Oh yeah.
Take a look at that. That was that's my favorite depiction of the Punisher.
And oh, cool. I
built off that because he was huge. He had a broken nose, and he was like built like a brick house, you know. So I really took that and ran with it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Nice.
Just to start to wrap up here, to loop back to the Kickstarter, again, you got about 9 days if you want to plug it. Do you have a favorite thing, like a favorite additional bonus that you have on the Kickstarter that people should keep an eye on?
I don't know if I have a favorite, but I'm excited to finally have a set of prints done. I've never...
Oh, cool.
Hmm. Never gotten around to prints. I've always meant to. Just never had the time or energy. You know, it takes me forever to draw. And at the end of the day, I'm like, you know, it's like having another job to do. Oni is doing the heavy lifting with this book and this campaign. And they've helped me pick a handful of some of my best covers. And they're making a print set of it, and so I'm pretty, you know,
that's awesome.
You know, like a more affordable option for people as opposed to collecting original art. Hmm.
Wow. And last question before we let you go, when are you returning to fifth grade?
God, hopefully never. Well, I have two kids and they're both older than fifth grade now, so I'm kind of...
You've retired.
Yeah. No, it was great. It was a great experience. The kids were awesome. But I'm happy to be, you know, drawing all day now. Made me appreciate the drawing business and being lucky enough to get to do this all day, every day now.
That's awesome.
I just enjoy it more now.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Lewis, congratulations on all the success. The book is great. And
love your art. Looking
forward to whatever you have next.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Great talking to you.
All right. Yeah, have a good day.
Take care.
Congrats. All right. Once again, the Kickstarter is called Carbon Based, The Art of Louis LaRosa. There is 9 days to go. You can check it out at Kickstarter. And it's so cool. If you weren't watching live and just listening to the podcast, this art is awesome.
Truly the Allosaurus breakdown is unbelievable.
I'm glad we stopped and talked about that. That is so cool.
Yeah.
It's also awesome to hear him talk about like how he tackled something like The Punisher, because I'm familiar with his work, but then hearing him talk about it makes me want to kind of go back and revisit it. Because, yeah, he did do like, it was a spookier Punisher where it was just like shadows and darkness and kind of monster style, which is cool, and it worked really well.
Yeah, I feel like so often we imagine artists just being like, zip, duh. Yeah. Of course, there's so much concepting. There's so much like mental writing that has to go into like the actual choices that go on the page.
Yeah. And some of the choices that have to go on to the stage, which is how I refer to what we're doing right here, are...
We're artists of the stage! Penciling our show! Penciling the podcast yet again.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments, and we will check it out. Can be about absolutely anything. In the meantime, what you guys drinking tonight? What's going on?
Well, Justin was making fun of me for my blinds money, but this guy's drinking like a... really expensive Merlot or something? What do you got? A cab?
Oh,
what
no,
do you got?
Sorry, that's gravy. I didn't eat dinner, so I was just drinking a little gravy. Glass of grave.
Yeah, a little red.
Pinot gravy.
Pinot grave. Yum, yum. Mm-hmm. I love a lukewarm gravy to get me through the show.
Ooh, Lagunitas Daytime.
That's right.
Is that lemon flavored? Is that like lemonade but beer?
Nope.
Oh, there's a lemon on it.
No, it's the sun because daytime.
Great. We do have one question here that I wanted to bring in.
I'm drinking in the last days of summer.
Yeah, we got a question here. It's for Pete. Pete, how are you feeling about the Travis Kelce Taylor Swift engagement?
Hey, I believe in love, man. This is exciting.
Wait, Alex, did you display that question? It's from an audience member, right?
I'm trying.
Which audience member said that? Yeah. Because it doesn't look like Schoeckler.
No, Pete, you love Travis Kelce. You love his beer. You love his podcast. So you got to be feeling pretty good right now.
Well, I believe in love, you know. Believe in it. So it's nice to see, when it happens in real life. It's always nice.
Oh, it'll be, I like that you're referring to this as love, pure love, true love, you can almost say. I like that we're going to have something to talk to as a culture for so long now. All we're going to hear about is this.
Yeah. Great. Can't wait. All right. Schoeckler asks, what are some of your favorite artists outside the comics medium? I don't know. Keith Haring's first one that comes to mind. He's pretty good.
That's the laziest answer, I think, in time.
Probably David Watterson, Calvin and Hobbes.
It's pretty close to the comics medium, I would argue.
John Romita Jr.
There we
really
go.
Really good.
Killing it.
Would you say Monet or Manet?
I was obsessed with M.C. Escher when I was much younger, which is another very easy answer, but I love that stuff. Also, this is very comics, but it made me think of Chris Van Allsburg just in terms of children's books. His stuff was great as well.
That's really nice. I was up in Maine, and my wife was singing in a show, and we were talking about Sunday in the Park with George. So I was getting into some pointillism while we were up there.
Ooh, pointillism. Dude, it's bringing me back to my art class days. I used to love doing pointillism.
Yeah, it's so easy. Just dots.
Yeah, all the amazing animators who work on all the Miyazaki films, I guess, is my favorite artist.
Right. I think the real answer is we don't know art outside of comic books.
I don't know, Louis LaRosa, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. The guy that painted my apartment? Is that one?
Yeah, he did a great job on your apartment.
Really?
I only remember all things that happened in the past half an hour. Matthew Schofield says, I know you guys all met when you were doing improv theater in New York, but did you all actually perform improv together in the same shows? Excuse me, I perform sketch comedy, not improv.
Yeah, he's a little stickler. He's not good on his feet.
He needs to write it down.
Yeah, he's got to memorize it. Because he went to Cornell, you know.
I'm not all loosey-goosey, just making up stuff that has no structure and honestly isn't that funny. I take the time to really craft it.
Wow. Strong takes. Well, we actually rarely perform together.
Yeah,
I never
performed with any of you guys. No. But Zelbin was the artistic director, and he was like, man, these Tuesday nights are slow. I got to come up with something.
That's not accurate. I will say, and I'm sure we've told this story, my sketch group, because I did improv and sketch, my sketch group.
You were champion of the bit to bring this up, Justin.
I also did improv and sketch.
Yeah, right. Anyway, of course you did. We all are masters of none. But what I was trying to say is Alex's sketch group, Elf, and Larry, my sketch group at the time, Cubicle, entered into a sketch competition, went head-to-head in the finals. And this was – I mean, and I will hand up, this was not our idea, but this was a very embarrassing way to do this.
Yeah.
At the end of it, the winner won, I think, $500 in cash and something else, like a weird thing. Ooh. And they brought both groups on stage. And I think over a course of a month, we went head to head.
It was
really
it was
so intense.
It was not like a weekend competition. It was multiple rounds and whole brackets and everything. Yeah.
I remember being like, we have to write better sketches to win. Like, it was crazy. And they brought us both on stage, and my group won, handed us the money, and the other people in my group were so mean and embarrassing. I was like, guys, knock it off.
They made us bow down.
I know. It was horrible. I felt very bad about that. Yeah, I was not yelling about that. Yeah. I was counting the money and touching the money and tasting the money.
Yeah. You didn't do improv with me, but you did improv with my wife before we were married, Justin.
Yo, I was just thinking about this the other day. I met Alex's wife, professionally, and we did improv.
Thank you. You had to clarify that? You had to clarify that?
It's important. How did you meet her, Pete?
Through going to the circus, because I'm a big fan of clowning.
Oh. One of the first, when I had just moved to the city in like 2003, I think, 2002, I answered an ad in backstage for an improv group, and Marnie was in it, Alex's wife, and we did improv, and it was like a very much a bringer show where you had to bring people and do scenes. It was short form improv. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. Yeah, we never performed improv together. Pete, I feel like I did at one point at the pit for you because I did occasionally pop in. I would end up on like team shows where they needed somebody to fill in. So I'm sure we had to at some point. I feel like we did.
We have improvised together, Pete, as well on a random couple shows.
Yeah. We did a couple college shows together. One that was very memorable.
Who? Me and you?
Yeah.
No. College shows.
Yeah, you don't remember we did this one. It was like 34th Street and like 8th or something, and it was a really insane show, but we like won the crowd over. It was a lot of fun.
I don't remember that, but I'm sure it was excellent.
Stanley has a question that speaks to my heart. He says, do you think as part of a new continuity, Peacemaker should be an adults-only show or more all audience? And we talked about this. You should check out Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast. We talked about the first episode of Peacemaker. We'll be recapping all the rest of the episodes. And I did say on that one, I have concerns about the DCU where
yeah.
I, I don't know. I don't think everything needs to be exactly the same. And I do love the idea. This is a shorter version of the rant that I went on there. But like, I do love the idea that James Gunn is like artist first. We're telling the story we need to tell. That's great. Love that. But I don't love the fact that Superman came out and kids were like, wow, very excited about these DC movies and TV shows. And the what can I see next? And the answer is literally nothing. You can't see anything. Can't see Peacemaker. Can't see Lanterns. Definitely don't go back and watch Creature Commandos. Probably not Supergirl, but I guess we'll see. Definitely not the Clayface movie, which is body horror, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, again, I understand they're not doing scripts before they're ready, but I feel like, to be frank, there's a little bit of poor planning there where they had to get the stuff out, where they should have had this stuff balanced. They should have been like, maybe this is how it happened, but like, maybe Supergirl is a family movie. I kind of doubt it based on the thing that it's based on, but
yeah.
Maybe their movies are the family thing and the TV is more for adults, but it's not clear, and that concerns me.
Well, I mean, I definitely hear that. I don't think that they seem concerned about that. I feel like James Gunn comes from a time where it was like, yeah, make kids watch fucked up movies. That's what we did growing up. And I think it's sort of like, I think it was especially striking that this first episode of Peacemaker had a scene in there that felt like purposefully like, that was like not really necessary for the story, or like it felt like it was a little bit like, I'll do this. That to me is the part that I was like, oh, well, you didn't have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about there's full frontal nudity in the first episode, right?
Well, not even just the nudity, but like it's just, I'm sure you've heard of it. It's a drug fueled orgy that the whole point of it is Peacemaker's ignoring it. Mm-hmm. So it sort of feels like, I don't know, like it felt like a purposeful, like, we do what we want.
Yeah, it's, I think the problem is, like, from a very outside perspective, it just stilts the momentum. Like, people are into Superman, and they want to see more of that, but it's going to be a while until they see anything like that, and things can happen in the interim, so I guess.
Yeah, they got time to grow up and get old enough to see, you know, the stuff that's coming out.
To really attend orgies. Some, like, street pills.
Yeah, and also their taste won't change. Nothing changes otherwise over time. They'll just be like, I continue to just be patiently waiting for more DCU content. Mm. Shree Bullet says, this is an audience question from Brooklyn. His son, what's the first comic book that I should read? He says he's read comics but might not remember because he was much younger.
Oh, yeah. Mm. It's already forgetting stuff. Man, it's tough. It's tough being a kid. what is the first? I mean, for me, it was... It was Hot Stuff and DuckTales, so I would go with some classics. Maybe go Disney kind of classics is my answer.
Mm. That's nice. I mean, there are some like good Disney comics coming out right now, so yeah. That's a good answer. I mean, my kids are really into the Babysitter's Club books, which are really good, the graphic novels. And the books like Smile, Guts, the Raina Telgemeier books. So Def, recommend those.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what else he likes, probably. You know, I think what you guys said are great suggestions. Like Justin said, the Dynamite Disney books that are coming out right now are really good across the board, as is a lot of their all-ages stuff.
Would you say start them with like Mouse? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's start really with cool. Like Mouse or like, yeah. What was the Alan Moore fairy tale one? The Sleeping Beauties one? That one?
Oh, the Lost Girls?
Lost Girls, yeah, start with Lost Girls. No, don't read that. Owlie is a good one, I think.
Owlie, yeah.
Owlie is very fun. Tiny Titans is good. Yeah, I would recommend, if he likes Batman at all, Dustin Nguyen's Little Batman. My kids were obsessed with that. When they were younger. So that's always
a great one.
And that, like, the art's great in that as well. So really helps. Great question from Schoikler that probably is very apropos of what's happening after the show tonight. Do you prefer to sleep while someone is watching you or while no one is watching?
Great question. Well, let me say this is a reference to... so when I was in Maine, did I talk about the sleep watcher? Alex, you weren't here. I think I did
this on character. No, I didn't hear about it.
We were talking about something, and someone in
the sleepwatcher
in the comments was saying, "Well, they're in a town in Maine. Someone would just go into people's break into people's homes and not rob them, but just watch them sleep, and he was never caught." And I was this was 20 years ago, and I was staying in a similar area of coastal Maine.
Oh man!
Wow. Did you wake up in the middle of the night just to check, just to be like, ha?
No, but I told everyone in the house and everyone else did.
Yes, I would just generally prefer nobody is watching me while I'm doing anything, honestly.
Huh. Interesting, from even a performance
this,
point
even
of view.
Even
this. Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is all CGI. Don't worry about it. Puppet Master says, we've been hearing a lot about how crazy the last three episodes of Peacemaker are. What are your guys' biggest wants, craziest predictions? It's obviously very far off because we're only getting the second episode this week. But just to add a little info here, they sent out the first 5 of 8 episodes to critics, held back the last three, which is not that weird. They do stuff like that sometimes or head back. Usually they hold back the finale, which is kind of annoying because it's like, what am I going to do? I was going to keep these 7 episodes secret, but leak the finale. That's not going to happen.
We only trust you so far, Alex, so says the industry.
But very specifically on the red carpet for Peacemaker, James Gunn said, yes, we held back the last three episodes because crazy stuff happened. And he said he hasn't even shown them to his publicist, that he wouldn't even let her see it. And he was like, I swear to God, I haven't even let her see it because of the crazy things that happened. So people are going nuts with predictions there. I could certainly run down some of the things that I've heard from online, but what do you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, publicists have loose lips. That's their whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a bloodbath then, if that's...
That's what I think, too. I think it's going to be... We talk about this on Sons of a Gun, but like, I think he's going to kill everyone in the universe, essentially.
Yeah, most of the speculation focuses on cameos, and I think we'll probably get something. Like, we've already gotten the Justice Gang in the first bit, and we'll likely get some other Superman characters because they filmed... They filmed the Justice Gang cameos on one day on set off from Superman. And then apparently they filmed some more stuff later on during the run in Superman. So we might see Superman. We might see Lex Luthor, Lois Lane, Daily Planet, whatever, something like that. That seems all reasonable. The things that are getting a little farther afield are people are like, Booster Gold is going to show up. It's Kumail Nanjiani, who's been rumored for a while. We're going to get Blue Beetle is going to show up canonically in the DCU for the first time. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn. Or the most outside one, they're like, yep, Batman and Wonder Woman are going to show up cast for the first time. And I think there is a 0% chance.
I heard it's a lot of Tim Meadows going to Maine and just watching people sleep.
Oh, yeah, man, that'd be crazy.
Did you say Tim Meadows?
Yeah, he's rumored to be in this season.
Wow. Yep. You think he's the sleepwatcher.
Yeah, the rumors are true. I'll be in the next episode.
I was going to say, he's in the trailer, I think, right?
Yes. Basically, the biggest thing is that, like, I don't think it's going to be the cameo-palooza that everybody thinks it is. I think he's holding it back for crazy plot reasons, like you were saying, Justin. And there will likely be people in it, but I don't think that's why he's holding it back. I think he's holding it back because... things get wild for the main characters, and that's what he doesn't want to ruin.
Yeah, and he's holding it back because it's just fun hype for the show.
There you go.
We'll see.
And we're a part of it. We're part
we
of it.
Are hyping, and we're hyping all our way to our next section, which is trivia. Uh-oh. And for that, we're going to kick it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Pete LePage.
We give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you'd probably want to go to a comic book shop. Oh, yeah. So all we need is a first hand up, a volunteer, and you will win $25 free online.
Alex, while we're waiting, are you familiar with Lil Zalbin?
I don't believe I am. What is going on there?
Great question. Last week we had Nat fill in, and he joined us for trivia, and he played Lil Zalbin and was able to be like a phone a friend fourth option.
Yeah, that was really nice.
All right, I'll have to check that out.
He has the same glasses as you, I think. Weirdly,
Nat.
That was the head anyway.
We shop at the same glasses shop, and we trade them back and forth. All right, we got Puppet Master in, so Pete, take it away.
All right, today's trivia is about the comic Mortal Thor, and a small nod to the legend, Ozzy Osbourne, R.I.P. to the Prince of Darkness. Ooh,
Mortal Thor, which is not coming out until tomorrow, so we're not going to do any spoilers for it, right, Pete?
Yep, that's true. Nothing that I'm talking about is, it's all in the press release and everything's above board, so thank you for checking with me.
Great, just I assumed I was just
how could he not? He's not some sort of immortal.
Yeah, exactly. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. This starts out as a what if scenario. What if blank? Is it A, what if gods in Asgard were just a story? B, stop terrorizing people, or C, Tara Rice?
Tara Rice?
That's right.
Tara Rice is the name of the actress.
That's an actress.
That's correct. Yeah.
Great. And she's famous for her rice, or what is she known for?
Yeah. Her married name is Rice Aroni.
Oh. Yeah. A? Is it A?
A is correct. All right.
Right.
Did
I see the hint I gave? Aroni?
Oh, nice. Well done. Who is the writer of this great comic? Is it A, Al Ewing? B, Patrick Ewing, or C, Kevin Spacey?
That's good stuff.
That is good. Did I ever tell you my story about Kevin Spacey?
Oh, no, I don't want to hear this.
Yeah, you helped, you were his publicist for
when you were younger.
6 to 9 months.
Yeah, and he wouldn't send me the last three episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Probably better you didn't see him. What's your Kevin Spacey story?
A is correct. Yeah, a lot of people were thinking maybe Patrick Ewing wrote it, but nope. All right, here we go. Last one. Question number three. What is the name of the main character? Is it A, Sigurd Jarlson? B, The Lispers Must Hate You? C, Sonny Sisson?
And I'm sorry, who is this a tribute to? Because I actually missed that at the beginning.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Okay.
Prince of Darkness.
Tell the story, says Stanley. Alex.
Oh, tell the story. Well, we're about to get an answer. The short story is that many, many, many years ago. Oh, by the way, is it A?
It is A.
Hey, congratulations, really Puppet Master. You have won a gift card to Midtown Comics. Just shoot us an email and we'll get that off to you. And Pete, what is the secret movie?
Well, of course, everybody knows I'm talking about the 2002 comedy Austin Powers Gold Member.
There we go. I believe that was guessed in the comments. That's too bad. Now, before we wrap up here, as we all know, new comic books are coming.
You were in the middle of a story, though, Alex. Is that
sure. Okay, so it's a pretty short story. I was at a Broadway show many, many years ago with my parents and my brother, and during intermission, at the top of the show, everybody was like kind of buzzing and looking around and being like, and I didn't know what was going on at all. And it turns out my parents were like, oh, Kevin Spacey's here. Kevin Spacey's watching the show. I think it was actually like Ed Harris was in the show and maybe they knew each other or something like that. So that was the connection. But everybody was very excited because it was like height of his stardom. And I was like, oh, where is he? Was he? And they're like, he's right there. And then the lights went down so I couldn't see. And during intermission, I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll see if I can see him on the way to the bathroom. Didn't see him anywhere. Went to the bathroom.
Lucky for you.
Went to the bathroom, came back, and my parents are like, well? I was like, I don't know. I didn't see him anywhere. I don't know where Kevin Spacey is. And my brother, who had also got to the bathroom, was like, you were in the urinal next to him.
Wow.
There
in
go.
The and urinal.
He was in the urinal next to me.
You guys were sharing a urinal.
In the urinal next to me. And that story has aged very poorly over time.
Yes, I would say.
Like crazy poorly.
I like you're learning this in real time.
Yes. Now, before I forget, and before we wrap up here, because I did forget, I do want to plug Drawer Boxes.
Yes!
Talk about them, they're great.
To sponsor the show, apologies to Drawer Boxes. I was supposed to do this earlier. Thank you, Justin, for the reminder. But if you haven't checked them out, they are awesome, and I mean that sincerely. They are your regular looking comic book boxes, but instead of opening from the top, they're actually drawers that you can pull out.
Yeah, why are you so choking excited. To death? Let me just continue. What I like about them is not only are they stackable, but the dividers keep the comics where they're supposed to be. And it's just so much easier instead of taking off a whole top and kind of flipping through them. You just pull it out and it's all there for you. Just fantastic.
You just pull it out and it's all there for you. Something that we love.
Yes. So you can get long boxes. You can get short boxes as you would normally. And the other thing that's very cool about them is they are stackable up to six high. And you can lock them with their box locks technology, which is basically like little plastic clips, but you put them together. They're very easy. And that way they won't fall on you at any point. They're very, very sturdy. I use them for my son. We have a bunch of them downstairs. They are great. And you can check them out at collectiondrawer.com. What?
I like how you said,
I use them for my son. I imagine
you stack your son or something.
You put him in and out of the drawer like a little coffin.
Yeah.
Good morning, little vampire.
As I said, one of them is not going to make it. One of the kids is not going to make it.
Well, I don't now know I see
one.
Why.
I don't know.
Now
which
I
one.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a money thing. It's a
poor pen.
Really? Anyway, new comics are coming out. What are you guys looking forward to?
Oh my God, so much great stuff.
Wow.
So much great stuff. I if you're asking me, I'm looking forward to Absolute Martian Manhunter number 6, as well as the Mortal Thor number 1, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder number 1.
Finally, Shredder is getting some play. I'm looking forward to The Knives, the new Brubaker Phillips book that's coming out tomorrow. That's
a small, easy read book. You know, it's a
holiday.
Quick
anytime.
Read.
Anytime they have something coming out, very excited for that. Universal Monsters Invisible Man number 1 might be something to check out. Can we say that we talked to them?
Yeah, we can.
Which was awesome, and we got to read it ahead. That was very cool.
Yes, and sorry, just to clarify, so James Tynion IV and Danny, who's the artist on the book, Justin and I talked to them earlier today, and we'll have our interview with them with some mild spoilers coming out midday in the Comic Book Club feed.
Yes, I would also like to say Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, number 2, a comic that is so good it makes Pete wet his pants just a little bit, and I love it.
So fucking creepy.
Can't wait for the next issue tomorrow. Alex.
You guys mentioned a lot of great stuff. A couple of other things I'll throw out. Masterminds, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. Really enjoying what Zach Kaplan has been doing, and this is a new title from him. So excited to check that out. Also, Superman, number 29. This is one which is a big plot of the DC universe where Superman is fighting Darkseid's Legion of Superheroes or Supervillains. So that's very fun. And then I feel like there was at least one other thing, but Green Lantern Dark is another title that I really like. And there's a new issue of that coming out. Just this dark fairy tale set in the Tangent universe, which I think is very cool. Yeah. And
it's folks, like something is killing the children, but with a Green Lantern.
Pretty much. And something is killing this podcast because we are done for the evening. A couple of people want to thank. We want to thank Louis LaRosa for coming out to talk about Carbon Base, the art of Louis LaRosa, which is on Kickstarter now. Also, Ben Morrow for talking about Huxley, which you can get the graphic novel out now
Huxley is awesome.
Next week on the show, we've got Ethan Parker and Griffin Sheridan are going to be back to talk about Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone and their new title, Blink and You'll Miss It, which is a very cool one.
Oh,
first
issue
that just came out. Also, Alex Crocus is going to be here to talk about My Father's Ghost, an almost true story. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast. Check that out Monday through Friday. Sons of a Gun, we mentioned earlier, our DC podcast. You can check out our Peacemaker recaps, patreon.com/comicbookclub to get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you in the Comic Book Club.
Yeah.
Good night, folks.
Take care of yourself.
They sit on crappy couches and they let